Wife of Malice, Episode 1. The bell screams against the glass as he pushes through the door, and the heavy frame shudders on its hinges. Rain follows him in, a cold breath that spreads across the floorboards and carries the street inside. My husband is a shadow I do not recognize. Rain slicks his hair flat to his skull. Water threads down the hard planes of his face, clings to his lashes, gathers at his jaw before it drops into his collar. The light from the front lamp catches the wet on his skin and makes him look carved from something darker than flesh. He looks like a killer. He looks like a king of the dark. Black steel is steady in his firm grip. His wrist stays locked, his fingers sure, as if the weight is nothing, as if he has held it long enough that it has become part of him. The scent of gun smoke clings to his jacket, trapped in the fabric, sharp and sour. It does not belong in my shop. It does not belong in the quiet between shelves. Blood stains his hand, too dark to be mistaken for anything else, streaked along his knuckles and pooled in the creases of his palm. The fingers of his other hand clutch a strip of torn leather against his side, the edge ragged, the surface slick where his grip has smeared it. And when he shifts, I see the pull of pain in the set of his shoulders. Dark droplets fall in his wake. They strike the floor with soft, steady taps and leave small stains that spread in the wood grain before they settle. The trail behind him keeps growing, and my eyes keep finding it as if looking away will make it worse. I do not see the man who reads me poetry. I see a man who breaks bones, bends the world to his will, and makes the air obey him without raising his voice. I see something in his posture that does not belong to the husband I know, something hard and cold that has stepped forward and taken the front of him. His gaze cuts through the room and finds me, and it holds as if I have been placed under a blade. His voice is a low vibration, controlled and measured, shaped by a night that is not finished with him yet. It fills the space between us and makes my breath feel too loud. I do not ask questions. The answers will come later. My hands move before my thoughts catch up. I reach for the brass ring on the desk. The metal is cold against my palm and the weight grounds me. I turn the sign to closed with a small, decisive click, and the sound feels like an order I am giving the world. I slide the bolt into place. The latch bites. The lock settles. The drag of metal lands hard in the silence, and I feel it in my teeth. Then I draw the heavy velvet curtains. The fabric drags along the rod and falls in thick folds, swallowing the window, swallowing the street, swallowing the view of everything that might be watching. The velvet is heavy enough to feel like protection, even if it is only cloth. Shutting out the predators in the street. Through the gaps, I still see the black cars. They sit along the curb with their lights off, their bodies sleek and polished, rain beating on their roofs and sliding down their sides. They look patient. They look hungry. They look like they belong to someone who expects obedience. My husband takes one more step, and his knee falters. It is a small failure, a brief hitch in his control, but it pulls something sharp through me. He catches himself before he falls, but the movement costs him. His jaw tightens and his nostrils flare as if he is forcing air through a narrow space. His shoulders lift, then settle again, tight as a drawn cord. I cross the distance and take his arm. His skin is hot beneath the wet fabric. Heat pours off him in a way that feels wrong, too intense, as if his body is burning through whatever restraint he has left. I drape his weight across my shoulders, and it hits me how heavy he is. How solid. How real. The strength in him does not vanish because he is hurt. It only shifts. It becomes denser. His blood warms my wrist where it smears through the sleeve. We move together, slow and uneven, away from the front windows, away from the door, away from the thin line between safety and the street. His boots scuff the floor, and the sound feels loud enough to carry through the curtains. I angle my body to shield him without meaning to, a small instinct I cannot explain. My heart beats hard, and I hate that it does not feel like fear alone. We vanish into the back stacks. The air back there is different. It is thicker, older. It smells of paper and glue and dust and the faint, sweet rot of time. The shelves close in, and the world narrows to rows and spines and the dim lamp that lives back here for inventory nights. The light turns everything amber and soft, and it makes his face look less like a stranger, but not enough. Along the rows bearing thousands of worlds, book spines press their titles into the edge of my vision. Names blur, stories wait with their mouths shut. The quiet here is not empty. It is loaded. It listens. It makes room for secrets. His breathing changes as we go deeper, rougher at the edges, controlled but strained. Every few steps, his body tightens as if something inside him slips, and he has to catch it and force it back into place. He does not lean on me the way an injured man should. He holds himself as if collapse is not an option he is allowed. I keep my grip firm anyway. I do not know what happened out there. I do not know who those cars belong to. I do not know why he smells like smoke and steel and death. I do not know why my husband walked into my shop looking like a man who has crossed a line and cannot uncross it. I only know that he came to me. I guide him to the narrow space between two tall shelves where the back wall blocks the line of sight from the front. I shift him carefully, easing him down, and his weight sinks for a moment before he steadies again. His arm stays heavy across my shoulders. His heat bleeds into me. His blood marks me. My throat tightens and I swallow it down. He sought in me refuge. I hope I am enough to keep him safe, and terrified I'm not.